Hello everyone, welcome to F1 Explains. This is the official Formula One podcast dedicated to explaining the sport we all love. My name is Christian Hugill. Katie Osborne is alongside me. Katie, we're in Canada by the lake, which is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And you know what? You could even smell like the fuel of the boats, and like it's just a fun... Actually, what I'm talking about with the boats, let me clarify. There are these water taxis that I'm learning about. They don't have a taxi sign or anything in them, but they're transports to get people to and from different parts of Montreal. I actually looked for a way to get on one of those boats last night, and
No!
It was all in French. I couldn't figure it out.
Well, that's a shame. I'd like to go on one, but still, we'll keep looking.
If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We are so glad you're here. Each week, Christian and I find experts to answer your F1 questions. And this week, we're tackling a topic suggested by Christian from Norway, Mark from California, and Far from Malaysia. F1 Explains listeners from all over want to know about... helmets.
I like helmets. I enjoy your dramatic pause, Katie. Yep. Yes, earlier this year, we explored race suits with Puma, and that was fascinating. But we haven't looked at helmets at all yet. Now, obviously, we all know why drivers wear them. As with everything in Formula One, though, there is far more to them than meets the eye.
Yeah, I like the deeper dive here. Of course, they need to be strong enough to protect the driver's head from impact, fire, and heat. But they also have to keep the driver cool and dry, and they can't be too heavy. Like, there's a lot of check boxes that go into helmets.
Yeah, now Bell is one of four helmet brands in F1 currently. Now, sometimes both of a team's drivers will wear the same brand. Sometimes, though, they're different. The Japanese company RI makes Yuki Tsunoda's. Max Verstappen, Sergio Perez, Nico Hülkenberg, and Daniel Ricciardo wear helmets from the German company Schuberth. Italy's Stilo make lids for Lance Stroll and Valtteri Bottas, but Bell are the most popular choice. Now, they make helmets for... I've got a list, Katie. Are you ready for my list?
Let's do it.
Both drivers at Mercedes, McLaren, Ferrari, Williams and Alpine, Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin, Zhou Guan Yu at Sauber, and Kevin Magnussen at Haas.
Well done. Bell has been going for more than 100 years, and it has its roots in the USA. It was founded in 1923 in California. Now, in the 60s, they made helmets for F1 champ Jim Clark, Indy 500 drivers, and stunt legend Evel Knievel. Have you guys heard of Evel?
I'm obsessed with the fact they made Evel Knievel's helmet. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? He says his Bell helmet actually saved his life when he crashed jumping over the Caesar's Palace fountains in Las Vegas.
What? Evel Knievel said that?
Yeah, that's right.
Amazing.
And for decades, they've made helmets for F1 champs like Senna, Schumacher, Raikkonen, Button, and many more, including the stars of today.
Yeah, now Stefan Cohen has been with Bell since the 1980s. He's the co-CEO, but he's more than just a businessman. He's a former racing driver himself, so he knows exactly what drivers need from their helmets. He is a world-leading expert on the subject. Katie, shall we go and meet him?
I can't wait.
Stefan, welcome to F1 Explains. And we're outside McLaren here in Canada, which is, of course, two of the drivers that you provide helmets for, isn't it? Thank you for joining us here on F1 Explains.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, indeed, the two McLaren drivers are using our products.
Which is always good. We're so excited to have you. It's such a pleasure to have you here. We're going to get straight into our questions from our listeners, who, Katie, are a very curious bunch, aren't they?
Aren't they? Yeah, aren't they all?
Aren't they just? Let's start with Brandon. Brandon's in Dallas, Texas. He asks a good question for us to start this interview with. He says, what are Formula One helmets made of?
It's several elements, but the two main elements of the helmets are, first, the outer shell, which is usually made of carbon fiber, and then the inner energy absorbing liner, which is made of some sort of foam, usually expanded polystyrene foam, that is also known for its properties in terms of insulation. So some people improving their house are commonly using that sort of white material. It's very similar to what is inside a helmet. Or, for example, also when you unpack a new TV, there are
that
these...
That type of foam.
Yeah,
yes.
There are these blocks of foam.
Uh-huh.
And, we don't package TVs, but we package heads.
Something
and we
much,
need
much more, yeah, precious.
We package heads is a fantastic way of looking at the helmet, isn't it? A package for the head.
No, that's a really good point to try and give us that word picture. I think that that really helps bring it up to speed. And Brandon continues to ask, what about the visor and the importance of that as well?
First of all, the visor, yeah. The material itself, we go for whatever transparent material that will give you decent optical properties, because it's a curved lens that you have in front of your eyes, so you don't want to distort what the driver is seeing in front of him. But safety first, so we need the best material to resist impact, potential objects, you know, hitting the visor, eventually very sharp objects. So usually we use some sort of polycarbonate. That's the standard in the industry.
Do you know what I realized, Katie? I don't know if this is the same for you. Katie's covered the vast majority of motorsports in the world. Katie's been to motor racing tracks all over the world. I've watched Formula One since I was tiny. And so we see helmets, we take them for granted.
Yep.
I don't think I know how they're made. How do you start the process of making a helmet? Is somebody there with their hands? Is it a machine?
I like that he's smiling right now, because it seems probably like such a, like a logical,
I just never thought about
it. But like never really thought about it.
As far as we are concerned, I can't talk for our competitors, but as far as we are concerned, there is an insane amount of hand labor into a helmet.
Really?
But before starting making the helmet, you have all the research and development. And the big difference between a company like ours and a normal, I would say, helmet manufacturer is that we are more of an R&D company with manufacturing capabilities.
Can I just say that means research and development, yes?
Yes, absolutely. So everything starts from research into materials, processes, with always one goal, which is delivering the optimal safety, and a secondary goal, which is delivering performance. And gonna tell me, how can a helmet contribute in terms of performance? Well, first of all, if you give to the driver an optimal ventilation, as an athlete, he will feel physically better, and at the end of a 90 to 120 minute race, he may be a few tenths faster. Then you have the aerodynamic comfort. If his head is shaking in all directions at high speed, it's going to blur his vision, it's going to make him uncomfortable, potentially unfocused, and so that's also how we contribute to the performance of the driver. Now, look at a modern Formula One car, and we all know that the engine cover is an important part of the bodywork, right? And what is in front of the engine cover? It's the helmet, the top of the helmet. So what you want is to have also, from the aerodynamic point of view, a nice airflow around the helmet that potentially works well in conjunction with the engine cover and with the central part of the rear wing.
That's so fascinating, and so much goes into it. And I think, you know, one thing that comes to mind for me is the fact that if it's an R&D, how do you find the research or the ability to test? Do you guys have your own testing sites for this, or do you just hope what you put out on the drivers, meh, that one works out this time, that one doesn't work out?
No, it's obviously we have state-of-the-art test laboratories.
Mm-hmm.
First, again, to test all sort of impacts, penetration, etc., to be absolutely sure that we not only meet the safety standard, which, by the way, for automobile racing like Formula One, are the most stringent helmet safety standard in
who
the world.
Who sets those standards?
Safety standards are set usually by FIA,
uh-huh,
and also by some independent, say, foundation or whatever that are focused on safety. Yeah.
And what kind of impact do they have to be able to withstand? And you mentioned those safety standards. How do they get tested?
Well, they get tested on the impact machines. They are dropped from 8-9 meters high on different type of anvils, some being at the opposite of the other. So basically, to make things simple, you can impact a helmet on a flat surface or on a dome, an hemispherical impactor. And the characteristic that you need in order for your helmet to be as efficient as possible are diametrically opposed, whether you impact on a flat surface or on a hemispherical surface. So the trick is to find the right balance. Actually, it's not that far from a race car also, where you want to find balance between power, suspension, aerodynamics, etc., etc. Same here. We have to find the right balance so that we can try to offer the best protection in as many different circumstances as possible.
Presumably they need to withstand more though than just crashes, because you're also talking about turbulence, because these drivers are pulling such g-forces, going so fast, airflow, heat. It's hot at the moment in Canada, but equally, as we've learned this weekend, Katie, we could get rain within a second, any moment. So presumably
hail, actually, so an element of on the helmet,
any
hail.
Element presumably you're also thinking about all of those factors with a helmet as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's not a secret. That's one of the reasons why we have, like, this year 13 drivers on the grid. It's because, for example, in case of rain, our helmets are known to perform quite well in these different circumstances. We have, say, less fogging problems than our competitors. That's one of the very strong points.
Your helmets don't mist up.
Well, never say never, but
but they're good. They're good at,
yeah,
not doing.
I think we masterize this aspect quite well.
Yeah, he says that with a big smile, by the way. And as it relates to kind of having the boots on the ground and people who are managing, like, say we did get hail, not that it was big enough hail probably to damage a helmet.
Well, I don't know, at one point, good
there,
Lord.
There, it was wild here in Montreal. You have boots on the ground here to kind of help these drivers when and if they need something with their helmet.
Well, we have in Formula One two racing service technicians. One of them being very, very experienced, counting more than 300 Grand Prix. And they are here to service the helmet, change the visors, install the tear-off visors, check the radio installation.
Ah, that's another aspect for the helmet. That's not necessarily a car scenario, is it?
No, that varies from one team to another, and they have a very different system depending of the team's technical choices and driver preferences. So two technicians, and they take care of everything. So our goal is that the driver can just forget about his helmet during the weekend.
Yeah, that it's just another piece of equipment that works properly. And so then the follow-up to that is, when are we here on TV and the radio is spotty, comms are off, clearly a driver says I can't hear you or whatever it is, right? Does somebody from Bell or Helmet or your team go, oh no, we need to get over there and see if it's a helmet issue? Or does someone from a team eventually come to you guys and say, all right guys, come on over, we need to finagle this?
No, in theory, in a race weekend, you know, everything has been studied quite well in advance. So if there is such problem during a race weekend, it's usually on the radio guy's side, and it's
okay.
Not our responsibility.
Right.
This being said, our duty and our responsibility is to deliver a product that is as good as it can be in terms of what the sound engineers of the radio system need for the communication between drivers and team to be as clear as possible. So that's a lot of work, I would say, before the season and in the conception of the helmet itself, to ensure a quiet and correct environment for the radio guys to operate. And as I told you, there are so many different configuration. Sometimes the microphones are mounted inside the helmet. Sometimes the microphone are mounted in the balaclava that is worn by the driver. In both cases, the last thing you want is to have too much wind going onto the microphone. So we have to think about that, because sometimes our needs is to supply fresh air to the driver, or maybe in front of the driver near the visor, for example, and the radio guys would want absolutely no air. So in the good old days, we found situation where the radio guys were putting tape on our ventilation because
they wanted what they wanted, right?
Yeah, our airflow inside the helmet was too strong. So yeah, now we're a bit more advanced than that, but yeah,
we take
so
helmets
many
for granted. We take helmets and the whole system's for granted.
It's what we learn a lot on this podcast, isn't it? What we take for granted in Formula One. Stefan, obviously so much of Formula One is about airflow, because the most efficiently cars cut through the air, you know, the quicker the car will go. Now, I'm conscious that your helmets are on the drivers' heads. The drivers' heads stick out the car. So how do you think about, you just talked about airflow coming into the helmet, but what about over the top? How aerodynamic do the helmets have to be to sort of fit into the overall performance of the car?
Yeah, it does. And there is a cooperation with the teams in terms of the what we call the rear spoiler, which is attached on the rear top part of the helmet, and that has to work in conjunction with the car and in conjunction with the seating position of the driver in the car. So two drivers, same car, same team, may have different needs because their height in the cockpit is not exactly the same. And then if I tell you, talking about external airflow, that if you adjust the front wing, for example, well, the airflow that is going to come in the helmet direction might be a little bit different.
If they change the front wing, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can end up in situation where suddenly you have a problem. You don't know why, because they're going to come to you and they say, hey, my helmet is moving, it's buffeting, I have buffeting.
If the team changes the front wing design, you might then have to make a tweak to the shape or the design of your helmet because the team have changed the front wing.
Well, let's say simply the setup of the front wing. We're not even talking about
a big change to the front wing. Sure,
yes.
Sure. The tiniest tweak
could have an influence on the helmet aero behavior.
How do you guys get the data back to you that maybe in this sense the helmet that weakened didn't seem to fit that of some of the tech details on the vehicle? How do you guys find that data out?
Well, first there is the real world experience where after a particular session during a Grand Prix weekend, you may have the driver of his engineer, of his physio, coming to our racing service guy and saying, we have this problem or this problem. And then obviously our guys have a little bit of experience and they know how to tweak things in the various situation, and we have to adapt the helmets so that we ensure optimal comfort in this case for the driver.
Well, there's so much to learn about helmets. I had no idea, Christian. Still so much more to learn, and we will do so in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to F1 Explains. We're at the Canadian Grand Prix, and me and Katie are not alone. We're with Stefan Cohen, the co-CEO of Bell Racing Helmets. Can I just say, before we carry on, I'm really enjoying this. This is, for a Formula One geek like me, such fascinating information that I just never sort of... You said it earlier, we take it for granted. It's absolutely fascinating. I know our listeners will be finding it just as fascinating, Stefan, so we'll go to another one. A listener from right here in Canada, Dave, is in Brantford. And Dave says, I've noticed there are small, clear pieces on some drivers' helmets. What are they for? Stefan, can you help Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably Dave is referring to the air intakes that are positioned on top of a series of ventilation holes and channels that are going through the shell and through the inner liner to deliver fresh air to the head, to the top of the head, or maybe to the face or whatever of the driver. And depending of the track characteristics, depending of the car characteristics, depending of the temperature. We play with these air intakes using bigger or smaller ones, sometimes covering only one ventilation channel at a time, and then you see a series of small air intakes on the top of the helmet, sometimes encompassing several channels in one go. And this varies a lot. And then something interesting, when it's raining, instead of forcing fresh air inside the helmet, we tend to invert the helmet. So basically what's happening is that you have a suction effect from the air intake, and you are sucking the warmer air that is inside the helmet, you're sucking it out, but you're avoiding forcing some air filled with water on the head of the driver, which would be a problem.
Wow. So is this only for F1 Bell helmets? I only say that because I feel like I've seen Bell helmets across the board in all different forms of motorsport. Is there always this attention to detail across the board, or is this strictly for Formula One?
It's not strictly for Formula One, but let's say that it's strictly implemented in Formula One.
I like the way you say that.
But it's absolutely available to all our clients.
Sure.
If they want to start playing with the small air intakes and everything, they're welcome.
You just mentioned other helmets. You're not the only one to be curious about that. Kathy from California is a new Formula One fan. Kathy asks, how do Formula One helmets differ from helmets used by football players in the National Football League? And Stefan's just gone, ooh, as if to say, is that a tricky question Kathy's asked?
Well, picture the difference between a bicycle and a Ferrari on the road.
I love a good word picture.
Hey, that is quite, so that. You're saying they are very, very different.
Very, very different animals, definitely. Absolutely. Completely different type of impacts, different type of protection required.
Do you think aerodynamics as well? Do you think football have a little, it cuts those fast runners?
Well, for sure, those guys, they run fast, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, they don't run Formula One car fast. They if they did, we'd have heard about it. That's very impressive.
I don't know. We should go in the wind tunnel with those guys and see if the helmet can improve their performances.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the moment, I'm busy enough with F1, so.
You don't need any more work. Yeah.
And another listener question, Christian from Trondheim in Norway asks, do drivers have a new helmet for every race weekend?
Well, Christian, yes, unfortunately they do. You know, these guys in Formula One, they are very picky. I mean, we are at the pinnacle of the sports. Everything is absolutely pristine, beautiful, perfect. And that's about one new helmet at every Formula One Grand Prix for these guys.
Dean in Australia asked a question that we might already have answered, Stefan, because he said, how many helmets does a driver use in a season? So is the answer strictly 24, or is it more complicated than that, given there are 24 races this season?
We try to be a bit more subtle than that with our F1 drivers, and there is a minimum amount of helmets in their contract, which is one helmet per race, and probably an extra one for the winter testing before the season starts. The reality is that some of them use a little bit more. And sometimes some of them say, look, I use twice the same helmet over two Grand Prix weekends. And I don't need the 25th at the end of the season or something. Yeah, you know, different drivers, different attitudes.
But that goes back into, you think about the design of these helmets. So how much is it that Bell kind of takes the design and engineering of it and then pass it along when the artwork needs to be displayed? Or do you guys also work collectively with the artists?
Well, if you're talking about the shape of the helmet and of the various features of the helmet, this is, first of all, safety and function. We literally do not care about the end result in terms of design. We care about safety, mm-hmm. about protection, about efficiency.
Mm.
The result is sometimes pretty, mm-hmm. sometimes less appreciated by some people. You know, I think I am probably what you can define as a purist. Function first, and fashion is not a consideration in racing. that's how we develop the helmet. For example, earlier we were talking about the air intakes and all the various air intakes that we have and how we replace them potentially from one session to another because the driver wants a different type of airflow. Well, this is typical from the auto racing context. If you were, for example, on a motorcycle helmet, you would design an adjustable air intake. But to design an adjustable air intake that would work, you need a mechanism inside, blah, 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 blah. And you're going to add 5, 7, 10, 15 grams to the weight of the helmet. So in F1, as I said, performance is important. So we don't want these extra grams.
All I can see is like a big like model of like if this then that, and so if not that then this, and then like here to there, and it's like it's like kind of a web to see how it would all be connected.
And then if you refer about the design, which translate into basically the identity of the racing driver, because we know their face but we know the helmet design also. For some of them, the helmet design is almost as popular or most popular than their face. So there we can contribute with some drivers. We help them developing the design that they like. Some others have their own designer and ideas that they send to us. And then on the technical side comes the realization of the design. So it's going to be hand painted. We have a team of helmet painters who spent an enormous amount of time painting the helmets of these F1 drivers. Usually, you count about 4 to 6 days of labor to paint one racing helmet.
And just to be clear, you're not getting involved in the painting and the design. So when Alex Albon, for example, had a panda on his helmet, you're not looking at the paint. You are purely worried about the function of it.
First, we're worried about function when we design the product.
Yes, of
right?
course.
Then,
yes.
In the case of Alex, he would send us the design and say, okay, this is what I want. This is a 2D PDF design from an artist.
Sure.
And then our guys have to translate this into the paint job. Now, let me tell you, you can find a few artists who know how to use an aerograph or whatever, you know, paint guns, small paint guns, and they do beautiful artistic job. But they may be the best artists. That's not good enough. That's not even going to make it. Because an average automobile racing helmet painter will add anywhere between 90 and 150 grams of weight in terms of paint. Our painters are trained and we have developed processes to use between 35 and 90 grams. So again, research of performance, weight, etc. It transpires at all level of all this helmet manufacturing process.
A couple of quick-fire questions before we finish, Stefan, because we've taken up enough of your time. Firstly, 13 of the 20 drivers on the grid wear Bell helmets. Quite simply, who chooses that? Is it the team or the driver who chooses, I'm going to have Bell?
It's most of the time a strictly driver decision.
Because I believe there was a case where Nico Rosberg was struggling with his helmet back in the past and said, actually, I'm going to have a Bell one and go on much better with it. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, Nico had a problem with his former supplier at a particular race, and someone in the team said, how is it possible that we are losing track on time because Nico doesn't see clearly at that point when Lewis doesn't have a problem? So they told him, look seriously into it. So Nico contacted us and he asked if he could try your helmet, which he did. And he kind of liked it. Then he came back to me and he said, can I keep the test helmet that you gave me? And can I use them when it's raining? And I said, no. Either you're with us, we get married. Either we don't look at each other. But it's not going to be like a shared story, you know? And so
you played hardball here with the negotiating with these F1 drivers. You're not afraid to stand up to them.
Yeah, but you got to be realistic. I mean, we put a lot of effort into this, so if he wanted the product that badly, well, sorry, he would have to switch to us. And he did. At the beginning, it was a bit tensed, but he did. And then there was a race that year where, if I recall correctly, it was Brazil and it was raining. It was completely crazy. And after the race, Nico sent me a message and he said, "You have your part into this, because for the first time in my life in a race where it was raining so much, I didn't think about my helmet."
Oh, interesting.
And the reflex of a lot of racing drivers in open cockpit cars when it's raining is that you try to control the way you're breathing. You adjust your balaclava. You go into many things to try to avoid to fog your visor. And this guy, thanks to our system, was able to forget about it.
That's
which
great.
Is absolutely perfect. That's the best thing someone told me in those kind of circumstances.
What a good story. I know you have touched on the design of helmets and that function and efficiency is more important than that of the design. But the design of Lewis Hamilton's Bell helmet, is that identical to George's, or is every Bell helmet different? I would assume every Bell helmet is different.
Not exactly every Bell helmet is different. Let's say, to go into the almost secret information.
We love good secret information.
Exactly. We really do.
We have two external shell sizes that we use in Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
George and Lewis might be into different shell sizes. So out of our 13 drivers, we have about 50% in one shell sizes and the other 50% in the other shell size. And then we obviously personalize the interior with added foam to make sure they have the optimal compromise between comfort and fit, make sure the helmet is not moving on their head. So no helmet is exactly the same as the other one. And in terms of aerodynamic, we talked about it earlier with the different spoilers, the different configuration. So again, not exactly the same, but extremely similar.
Stefan, genuinely fascinating to talk to you. We've really enjoyed this, and I know our listeners all around the world will have done as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here on F1 Explains. It's been an utter pleasure.
Katie, Christian, thank you very much for having me.
And that was Stefan Cohen, the co-CEO of Bell Racing Helmets. Katie Osborne, what do you think?
You know what's so interesting? I say this, I think, every single time. You know what's so interesting? After every single one of our...
Well, it's good that there's interesting things, because we're not doing our job very well.
I have looked at so many helmets. I've seen helmet cases for many different series. I think, again, I've seen colors. I've seen really creative, artistic designs. I know how much drivers have put into the artistic designs, and I have never quite thought that when they get into the race car, the helmet would have any impact on the motorsport, their performance. I don't know. I never really like put two and two together. And so I think like I'm just kind of like sitting in the fact that like that is a fact that over the last 16 plus years of my coverage of motorsport, I can't believe I didn't think a helmet really like paralleled much with the performance.
I couldn't agree with you more. I thought exactly the same. But not only that, wasn't it fascinating and wasn't it brilliant that we now take helmets less for granted? But what a fascinating man. This is one of my favourite things I like doing about this podcast. Not just the topics like helmets, but also the characters and the individuals. Yeah. Stefan is just a fascinating man with fascinating knowledge, with
and
fascinating insights.
Talks with such intention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And I said it to Stefan as he left me and Katie. We've been doing this podcast for, 18 months now. That's one of my favourite interviews we've done. I really found that fascinating. What a lovely, lovely man. And if you want to know even more about Bell, because they're a fascinating company, do check out their website. It's bellracing.com.
Anyways, don't forget it. We want your emails, questions, comments, voice notes, anything you'd like. Please send them to f1explains@f1.com to get in touch.
Just one more thing before we move on as well. One of Bell's sister companies also makes the tiny little in-helmet cameras, which you see on the coverage recently, which I find particularly fascinating, which I think a lot of our listeners, when they're watching Formula One, will have spotted. And speaking of our listeners, let's say hello to Lindsay in Philadelphia, Davnish in Mumbai, Jenna from Michigan, and Kate from South Australia.
That might be our first Mumbai.
I think you're probably right there.
That might be our first.
They've all got in touch to say hello to us recently, as has Jason in Littleton, Colorado, who's been listening to our episode about this year's F1 video game. Katie, I understand you've got an email from Jason.
Yeah, that's right. He says, hi, Christian and Katie. I love the podcast. I've already learned so much about Formula One and the various aspects of the sport, strategy, and racing. I think that means newbie.
I looked at that as well.
At EA Sports F1 24, I play the game on amateur mode, just as your guests, Lee and Casey, mentioned. It's a great way to race around without spinning out on the first lap with some AI assists and even replays to try again. I love the game, love the pod. Wow, love that.
And I love
actually seeing the word noob in writing.
I was about to say, Jason, we're really glad you enjoyed the episode, but we're also glad you taught us the word noob, which is good. Excellent. Thank you, Jason. EA Sports F1 24 is still available to buy now. This is a sign that I've been too busy in my life. I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, and you were stoked on that episode.
I still haven't played it. And by the way, you know how much I love the game. That's me being too busy. I need to take a week off work and play the game. Our episode with the people who made it is on this podcast feed. And if you're new to us, me and Katie have been explaining the world of F1 for the last year. So you can scroll back into our back catalogue for explainers on everything from driver fitness to an episode on race suits we mentioned earlier, our quickfire specials, all there on this feed. Binge, download them for plane journeys, for long drives. It's all there for you.
That's right. We have new episodes every Friday, so please don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, leave us a lovely comment. We'll probably read it on this pod. We will definitely read it off the pod as well. And, you know, one of the things that we don't explain is the weather when it comes to Formula One. I will tell you, we moved our tables here at McLaren, so I wasn't in the bright heat and sun, and now I need to move tables and go inside because I'm getting rained on.
You're so right. At the start of this episode, we were worried about getting sunburnt. We've reached the end of the episode and we're going to have to rush off because it's just started raining.
Literally, okay. Don't understand.
We're going to go. We're going to get some coats on. We're going to get the equipment in the dry. And me and Katie will be back next week. Until then, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Let's go in.